This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. And if you didn't listen to our last episode on cryptocurrency and the blockchain and Ethereum, go check it out, especially at the end. Danny was tired. He said something that we both got hysterical. We were laughing so much. We had tears coming out of our eyes and we couldn't breathe. But we're not going to tell you what that is. You're going to have to go check out the last episode. I just thought that was priceless. Anyways, this is kind of like a follow-up episode. We are going to, because Danny had this great idea because he's brilliant and he's also good looking because he's a bald guy like I am, about centralization versus decentralization. And I am going to be like a passive host this time, or I should say passive co-host, because Danny is more of a nerd when it comes to this stuff than I am. So I'm just going to be like you, listener. I'm going to listen. If I have a question, I'm going to raise my proverbial hand and go, I don't understand. So Danny's going to do most of the talking. I promise I will not take a nap. So Danny, my cousin and brother in Christ up in Rochester, New York, take it away.
Again, this is spawned from the conversation we had on our last episode, because in essence, Bitcoin is a decentralization of money. So if you go back and listen to that episode, you'll get all the gory details on that. It was a very fun conversation, especially the humor at the very end. But that sparked my thinking, because when I was doing some research on the Bitcoin front of it, this concept of centralization versus decentralization can be applied to something much larger, which is the internet in general. So I wanted to talk to today a little bit about centralization versus decentralization as it applies to the internet as a whole, talk a little bit about networks, and then talk a little bit about ISP. So that's where the whole conversation spawned from. So this whole concept of centralization versus decentralization, what does that really mean? Well, the easiest way to break it down is, if you think of centralization, is all your eggs in one basket. So governments are centralized. We in the United States live in a representative democracy where people vote for their representatives. That decentralizes things a little bit. Whereas if you look at like 16th century Europe, where everybody was living in a monarchy at the time, that was a centralized government, because the monarchs were the head of the government, and one monarch led to the next monarch, led to the next monarch, based on either who took over or who was the next in the bloodline. So it was very centralized versus something where you vote for your representatives, that's more decentralized. So again, all your eggs in one basket. Decentralization, on the other hand, has to do with spreading things out. So think a little here, a little there. From the finance world, if you're into playing the financial markets and all that kind of stuff, think about diversifying your portfolio, right? That would be a concept of decentralizing so that you don't have all of your money in one spot. That's kind of like what decentralization is. Centralization of the internet is a big topic that I saw in a lot of the articles that I was reading. And that basically means that currently, although the internet is not 100% centralized, because there's not one specific company that owns all of the servers that drive all of the web pages, it's getting pretty close, because there are fewer and fewer companies that are running the servers that run all of the web pages. If you think about Google, you think about AWS, you think about Facebook for a lot of the social media stuff. So it's not 100% centralized, but the more we stuff all of these web pages and websites and web apps into these massive data centers that are owned by large corporations, the more centralized the internet is becoming, which goes against the entire premise of what the internet was originally supposed to be. The original idea of the internet was that we had this decentralized conglomerate of computers that hold information that can talk to each other so that we could communicate back and forth and we could share information back and forth. without having everything all in one place. I mean, that was the original intent of the internet. And now over time, obviously, we've gotten to the point where we're getting less and less of that. On the flip side, decentralization of the internet has to do with storing websites, pieces of websites, pages of websites, bits and pieces of these things on many different computers, not just those that are owned by big corporations, but they could be owned by private individuals as well, like you're my, like myself or you, and connecting them all using what is referred to as a peer-to-peer network. Now, I'll get into that in a little bit later, but this would mean that not one single server or not one single bank of servers or not one single data center or one single company would have control of all of the information. In some cases, you can set this up so that there would be much more redundancy involved as well, so that you wouldn't have, you'd have multiple copies of these things spread out. If one server goes down, there are tens or hundreds or thousands of computers that can step in to fill that up. So if you've ever noticed that sometimes the website goes down, it's down, you can't get to it. If it's distributed properly and there's multiple copies of it, server A goes down, it should flip over and pick it up from server B, wherever server B is.
Unless you have the bank that my wife and I had when Hurricane Katrina hit, they only had their servers in New Orleans. And so when New Orleans flooded, we couldn't get access to our money. So when they were bought out by Capital One, Capital One says, yeah, that's not a good idea. We're going to spread the servers out across the country.
Yep. And that's exactly the thing, spreading out, right? That is the concept of decentralization. You want to spread these things out. You want to spread them out physically, but you also want to spread them out in terms of ownership as well. That's the big thing. It's kind of like the idea, in some cases, it's kind of like applying the, I don't want to get back too back into the weeds, but if you go back to the talk we had last episode about blockchain, it's like applying the blockchain to the overall internet, which is sort of what the idea of Ethereum is trying to get to. But you can go back to that episode and listen to that, because that's a longer conversation. So let me talk about a couple of the pros and cons of this. The pros, obviously, are no one source of truth to be manipulated, hacked, censored, or controlled. That, for me, is a big one. You've got all of these websites, all of these different platforms that are being stored on Google servers or AWS servers. At this point, it's fairly easy, and we're seeing it in this country, for the platform itself or the government to come in and say, we don't like X. Can you please do something about that? Mm-hmm. And of course, whoever owns the servers, whoever owns the platform, can then say, okay, yes, we'll do something about X, and then X goes away. Doesn't matter what side you're on. I'm not talking about particular sides here. Whether you're on the right or whether you're on the left, your information should be available and visible for people to read. I am a big advocate of, when I say freedom of speech, anything should be available for people to look at. People should be critical thinkers and be able to make up their own minds about what they see and about what they read. And the biggest part of critical thinking is having that information readily available, and both sides of that argument readily available for people to make up their minds.
I like how the liberal Bill Maher puts it. He said, I don't agree with Alex Jones, but Alex Jones deserves to be heard. I love that quote.
There's another gentleman who's taken a lot of flack, and I personally don't agree with any of his politics, but his name is Richard Stallman. So Richard Stallman is one of the ones who started the GNU project. The GNU project is a big open source advocate. He has a whole foundation, and his whole premise is that everything on the internet should be freely available. All the information should be freely available. He hates the idea of locking things down from a DRM perspective, this digital rights management. So like, even when you pay for something and buy it, you're still locked into a box, like you can't copy it. He's an extreme liberal on many points. I don't agree with a lot of the things that he says, but One of the things he was saying in an interview a few years ago is that if there's a website in Australia that is against abortion, he believes that abortion should be legal everywhere. But if somebody went in there tomorrow and said, I don't agree with the position with this website that is anti-abortion and I want it shut down, and the Australian government shut it down, he would be one of the first ones there to fight to get it back up. Because even though he doesn't agree with the position, he believes that the position has a right to exist for people to see. So again, same thing that Bill Maher says, right? You don't have to agree with a position in order to say, I believe that the position should be out there. The free exchange of ideas is really what we're talking about. And the internet really was supposed to be that. That was the original intent of it.
Now, if we go back in history to World War II, we all know how Adolf Hitler controlled Germany. He just controlled the media, which back then wasn't the internet. It was just TV and newspaper and radio. And I think it was his number two guy. I can't think of the name off the top of my head. He said, yeah, you control the media, you control the population. So what they actually did, they took a centralized media and made it reverse. They went from decentralized to centralized. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yes. So what they did is they made all of these media, whether it be TV or papers, they made it state owned, I believe is really what they did. And they put like government officials in charge of all of the media. There's other countries that do that now. China is a huge example. China literally has a firewall built around China, the firewall built into their internet. They don't allow Google searches. Everything is scrubbed going in and coming out.
What are the only two social media sites that are allowed in China? Do you know what they are? One of them's obvious.
Well, TikTok is one of them, right?
Yep. What's the other one? Do you know?
I do not know the other one.
LinkedIn.
Really?
The only two. I don't know why LinkedIn. I get TikTok at it. And here's what's interesting. TikTok in China is not the same TikTok we get in the rest of the world.
Yeah, I can't
for the very reason you just said.
Well, yeah, because there's too many people on TikTok in the United States that put out varied ideas about varied things. So I could see why China would want a version of TikTok that is more controlled, so to speak.
You think North Korea is centralized too?
North Korea has its own internet where I don't think they let anything in. Like, I think I actually read an article where, like, they just don't let outside traffic in.
I guess there's a couple people at the high. I'm sure Kim Jong-un, I'm sure he has access to all the internet. But his people, no. You have no idea what's going on in the world.
Yep. Nope. And they have propaganda websites that show up and all that kind of stuff. It's crazy. I've read articles on that one, too. Very interesting topics of conversation. Anyway, so that's like the main, for me, that's the main pro. Another big pro is that if you do it right, you have built-in backups already because you're distributing multiple copies of these, you know, whatever you've got out there across multiple machines. So one goes down, you've always got something else somewhere to pick it back up. This whole idea of decentralizing, if you do it right, makes it literally unhackable.
Like the blockchain.
Like the blockchain. Now we get into some of the cons of this. One big con is that to do this correctly, you need to get folks like you and I, who are willing to use our bandwidth properly or use our bandwidth properly to be able to serve this up. And it basically means running server software on your whatever machine you have or having a separate machine. There's multiple ways you can do it that basically would connect you to this peer-to-peer network so that you'd have pages available, have pages stored, whatever. A lot of individuals don't want that responsibility. I found a number of articles that said people just don't want to be responsible for that. Because now think about it. You're running a node on a network, right? You're running a piece of this network, but it's your device. So you're the one who's now responsible for it. So I get that. Large organizations and governments don't want to give up the control that they now have. That's probably the bigger con. That's probably the bigger piece that makes this. That's a con for this and a reason why it's taking so long to get there. AWS, Google, governments around the world, they don't want to give up control. And it's going to be hard for every one of us to fight against that because they're already embedded so much into this whole process. I mean, I didn't look up the numbers, but I want to say that AWS now runs like at least half of the servers on the internet.
Wow.
I mean, think about that. Don't quote me on that number specifically, but I know it's a large number. And then there's latency issues, obviously. So speed problems, basically. So if you think about it, the reason we get fast internet now is because, A, we have pretty decent backbone here in this country. And other countries obviously don't have the same kind of speeds that we have. But there's also the latency issues of that. The machines that they're running in these large data centers are very fast machines. And a lot of times what they are is they're like one big computer that's running multiple virtual computers on them, and they're just very fast. They have the ability to process information very fast. They have the ability to communicate very fast and serve this information out over the network traffic very fast, because these data centers are connected directly to these internet pipelines, the ISPs or the internet backbone, at the highest speed that they can get. Mark in Houston, I believe he's got 1 gigabit internet. You have the 1 gigabit internet, right?
Yeah.
Myself, because of where I am, and I can't get any of those 1 gigabit features yet because I don't have fiber in my area, I'm still on cable. Right now, I'm running the 250 megabit internet. I'm getting ready to upgrade to the next tier. But again, my bandwidth is limited. So if I'm running a node and Mark's running a node, pages being served off of Mark's computers are going to load faster for somebody than pages serving off of my machines.
You know, what's funny is because I have such super high speed internet, when I take the dog for a walk and I take a picture on Snapchat or something like that, because I'm no longer connected to my high speed internet, it's like, why is this taking so long to upload? Because now I'm on the cell network, and it's kind of frustrating when you get used to the super high speed internet and you go off. It's like, oh, 5G is not even as fast as my home internet.
Yeah, no, and it won't be. And there's, you know, let's just say there's a lot of interesting theories around 5G. I think Mark knows where I'm going with this, but there are a lot of people that are concerned about 5G, and it hasn't been out long enough for me to know whether any of those concerns are valid or not. But again, with any of these things, right, you're still talking about 2G, 3G, 4G, 5G, whatever G they have. You're talking about putting up these big towers that are now injecting basically waves. Like, they're radiation waves. Let's not kid ourselves, because they all forms of communication, all forms of light, all forms of sound, all forms of those kind, they're all part of that band of wavelength of waves in the physical spectrum. They all have some form of radiation to them, because that's, I mean, radiation just isn't what comes off of the ground, right? It's also, there's this electromagnetic radiation, right, that comes from these waves. Now, there's a lot of people that are concerned that the more G's we add, the more power, because you're talking about more powerful waves. The more powerful we make the waves, and the more we bombard ourselves with these waves, are we setting ourselves up for problems down the line? Physically, as a species, with different kinds of things. Again, hasn't been around long enough for us to be able to actually make any real determinations about that. But something to always think about in the back of your mind. More cell towers means more of these waves bouncing around. But back to the other point that I was making to kind of piggyback off that, latency issues is another problem. There are actually people whose home internet is actually cellular internet, right? Because they're either in a more remote location, so they can't get cable out, or the cable that they can get out isn't really all that good, so they go off of like a Google Fi or a MiFi or a Verizon internet or something like that, where it's still all cellular. So latency issues could cause a problem with this decentralized internet, where sometimes web pages load fast, sometimes they don't. And of course, over time, that's going to annoy most people, because most people don't have the patience to realize that this stuff is going on. Because now we've all been conditioned to jump online, we hit a page. You and I remember when web pages were slow. Like, you'd pull up a web page that just had text and one, just text, and maybe one small picture, and that would take like 45 seconds to a minute to load, and you're just like... But back then, the technology was so cool, you're like, this is awesome. And now a web page takes like 10 seconds to your load, and you're like tapping your watch. Dude, what's the problem? What's the problem? Is my internet down? Like, is the network down? And I'm like,
you know, and Google has said pages that don't load in less than 3 seconds, you actually get penalized by Google because they know that their users do not want to wait a long time. So if you're a website owner like I am and like you are, your page, doesn't matter what's on the page, better load lickety split, because number one, Google. Number two, people are not going to wait. This is not 1995. If that page doesn't load quickly, they're gone and they're never going to come back.
Yep, exactly, exactly. Good or bad, that's where we are. So latency issues would obviously have to be worked out on it. So those are the cons of the decentralization process. I mentioned earlier peer-to-peer. So let's talk a little bit about peer-to-peer. If you think about the way networks run now, whether it be a network of machines connected in your house, whether it be a big corporate network, or whether it be a network of servers that are running part of the internet, they're generally all what they call client-server networks, where you have one main server that contains all of the information, and then that serves out all of that information to all of the clients. So, Mark, your machine, my machine that we're working on would be the client. And let's say you had a file server in your house that stored a whole bunch of files on it. That would be your server, which would then serve that information to you. Going bigger in corporations, you know, you have all of these servers, and then you go to the company's, you know, web portal, whatever, or you connect to an application that then goes out and gets data from a database somewhere. Those databases are on servers, and then they are serving over the network to you as a client information. So that's client server. Peer-to-peer basically means that instead of having one particular machine that has all of the information and serving down to clients that are all just consumers, every machine on the network is both a client and a server. So you have some of the stuff on this machine, some of the stuff on that machine, some of the stuff on that machine, but this machine is also a client machine, so it talks to that machine, and it's sending information to that machine, but it's pulling information from that machine, so it's distributed. Does that make sense? I just want to make sure that I explain that good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what peer-to-peer is. Now, in modern days, what they do is they have actual software that you can run. So think about this. Here's a good example. If you guys remember back, anybody who remembers, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, there were sites like Napster and LimeWire where you could go out and get music. Those were all peer-to-peer networks. The reason it took so long to bring those particular networks down is because everybody was storing copies of the music. And again, at the time, right, again, we're talking about stuff that was going on that was considered illegal in many countries, including this country. Other countries, it was not illegal. So that's where we get into a lot of this digital rights management, which whole other conversation. But the fact remains is that I had a song, you had the song, my mom had the song, my brother, we all had the song. And when somebody else wanted to download the song, it could pull a bit of it from your machine, from my machine, from my mom's machines, from my brother's machine. And by doing that, first of all, it sped up the download because now it's pulling from four different machines instead of one. So if you've got good latency on three of the four, but bad on one, you're still compensating for that. And it was hard to get rid of them because that one song, you couldn't just go to that one server and shut down that one server because you shut down you. I've still got it. My brother still got it. My mom still got it. You get shut down. You put out the word, I've been shut down. Somebody else spawns up a server. I give all the files to that person. We've just replaced you. That's peer-to-peer. And it's all done using software. So you're running software on your local box. You could do the same thing by having a separate box in your house that does the same thing, but all those networks were really being done using that kind of a thing. So that's what peer-to-peer is. You're basically connected directly from one machine to another. Even if we solve the challenge, so I was thinking about this part of it, and I mentioned it at the end of the show, and I still, in the research that I did, this is one of those things that I just, maybe if I spent more time researching, I could find it. All of these articles talked about decentralizing the internet. None of them could I find solve the problem of, okay, you decentralize the internet from the server perspective, but what about the actual backbone? Like, if you think about it, you could have all of the servers in the world decentralized. You could have copies of everything running on 100 million machines around the world. If you've got three companies that control all the cables that transmit all of the information, what does that effectively do? Because all you've done is kick the can down the road. So the internet may be decentralized, but if a government wants to shut something down, they can literally go to the internet service provider that's providing all of this access. And obviously, you're making it more extreme, so it would have to be a much more extreme thing for them to do. But they could just turn off the access. They could literally just cut you off of the internet. They could cut a whole they could cut the cable. Like, the fact that the cables themselves are really only controlled by a few people or a few companies is part of the thing that makes this whole thing not completely plausible. Because even if you could get to the concept of decentralizing the actual servers, you still have the actual hardwire. Because right now, a bulk of the internet still all runs on hardwire. There are literally massive cables that they have stretched. And you can look this up. This is an amazing thing to look at and to look into. They have literally run massive cables underneath the Atlantic Ocean to connect the United States with Europe. And at the points where they come out of the ocean and come on dry land, they literally have military installations there that guard them. I mean, that's the internet. That's how the internet gets across the sea. Now, folks like Elon Musk, and there's HughesCo is another one that's been doing it for a while, but these satellite providers, they're trying to change a lot of that. Google tried a while back to be able to deliver a satellite by putting these things on airplanes and flying them around. But they figured that wasn't a good idea because then you have to try to refuel the planes in flight, and that became a whole thing. However, we are making progress towards that. But then again, who owns the satellites? Like, the communication chain itself, the way the information is transmitted, not where it's stored, but how it actually gets from point A to point B. How do you ever decentralize that? I still don't think, unless we all have wires that we run and connect to each other's houses. There is a solution that could be on the horizon. They have this idea of what's called a mesh network. And basically, you've got a router in your house that broadcasts a Wi-Fi signal. I've got a router in my house that broadcasts a Wi-Fi signal. But it also allows us, those routers also allow us to connect to other Wi-Fi signals. There's a way to set the router so that it not only does it broadcast one signal, it can connect to another one. The way you really get around this, and again, the technology is far off. I know that they're working on it. I haven't checked into it in a while. If we have devices in our house that can wirelessly connect, I connect to my neighbor. My neighbor connects to my neighbor. My neighbor connects to two houses down because the guy in between doesn't care, right? And we start connecting to each other. Then you're eliminating the use for wires because we are literally connecting our computers together wirelessly from point to point. But again, latency problems, consumer device issues, you get into a whole these same two or three cons. You run into them there too. The technology is there. It's just not there yet. I think at some point we will have the technology to do it. I think the biggest stumbling block to this whole process is going to be large corporations that are already embedded, right? They're just not going to play nice in that space.
Very fascinating conversation. Thank you for taking over the show this week, because I would have talked for 30 seconds. It would have been our shortest episode ever. But it's very interesting, especially the last part about even if we decentralize everything, you still have the backbone. So I wonder how many people actually thought about that. So hope you enjoyed this episode of the Two Bald Nerds podcast. We will be back next time with a new topic. And it's my time to pick the topic. And I actually laid down the gauntlet because I already have the new topic. So that puts Danny in the pressure seat here, if you will. So next week, we're going to be talking about some apps and services that we can't live without. And it's going to be interesting because we are not going to share our notes this time. Nope. And we don't know what we're going to say, sort of like we did with the books a couple episodes again. I'm going to tell people about the WhatsApp group because you did most of the talking on the episode today. I want people to hear my voice because I'm narcissistic like that. So if you're on WhatsApp, please join us. There's nobody else but Danny and I talking about it. All you have to do is, I'm sure you have the WhatsApp app. If you don't, it's a free app. Just go to your app store or Google Play, look up WhatsApp, download it. It's like one of the most popular messaging apps out there, even more popular than Facebook's, much to Mark's chagrin. So you just go look for the name of the podcast. Real simple. The number 2, Bald and Nerds. Nerds is spelled with a Z. So if you got the name of the podcast, you just take that, go look it up in WhatsApp. And we'd love to see other people there. Right now, it's crickets and tumbleweeds. So we'd like to have you there. So Danny, thank you for explaining decentralized versus centralized. Very fascinating listening. I actually was so enthralled that I didn't fall asleep. I didn't doze off or anything. I actually paid attention. So I learned something today. I really appreciate that.
I can see Mark, so I can verify that.
Well, Danny, before we let them go, there's one, you know, I hope people don't just think this is a corny sign off, but it's really important because especially with everything Danny talked about, you got to stay on the cutting edge. And one of the best ways to stay on the cutting edge is what, Danny?
You got to stay nerdy.